Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
Anton, good man yourself. Listen, before you say anything, I have a question to ask you about something, because I'm just wondering if you think that the conservation techniques regularly employed by the Maine lobster men, such as, you know, V-notching and all this, do you think they effectively sustain lobster population levels? Because, I mean, your man Carson, I mean, Carson actually, I've only about 50 pages left, he argues that any fluctuations in lobster numbers are natural owing to the crustacean's dependence on fluctuating natural factors, such as water, temperature and current. And I'm just wondering if you agree.
Well, I think you have to factor in what he says about the availability of habitat to function as hatcheries for the juvenile lobster to finally make it to the scale that it might be V-notched or be able to fertilise other lobsters.
Wow.
Did you actually read the lobster book?
It has only 289 pages. I have about 40 to go. It is fascinating.
Tell me it's
stuff.
Not far. Isn't it brilliant?
For those people who are wondering what we're talking about, it's a continuation of last week where we found out that what Anton has been reading in a very busy week in his life, by the way, when he's better think, well, his other things to be doing, he decided that the Secret Life of Lobsters is the one to be reading about, the Maine lobster. I mean, Maine as in the United States, lobster.
Indeed.
People. It is fascinating indeed. Can we move on to something else? Have you any stories for this week as opposed to last week's continuation?
I have life lessons for this week, Dave.
Okay,
not
off you
stories,
go.
Life lessons. Yep. One of the things that you mightn't have been aware of, but that is a principle by which you should live, I want to bring to your attention. If in doubt, don't urinate towards Russia.
If in doubt, don't urinate towards Russia. What's all that about now?
Well, even if, never mind doubt now that I think about it, even if you're absolutely sure that urinating towards Russia is a good idea, don't. If you are in Norway and you stand at the border, because the Norwegian border obviously covers quite some distance up again, Russia, and I believe there's been some unpleasantness in the past in respect of this, people for some reason have a desire to stand facing Russia and pee at them. A bit like I fart in your general direction. Your mother was a hamster and your father smelled of elevators. This is illegal in Norway and you will be fined 3,000 kroner, around €290, for offensive behaviour at the border directed at the neighbouring state or its authority.
Are they just scared of some sort of Russian interference in Norwegian affairs and they're just better off not to do it? Is that it?
I think that's the general idea. My understanding of Russia is if you draw its attention and really piss it off, it has a tendency to smote you with heavy
prejudice.
Okay,
hold
prejudice.
On a second. I mean, like, you know, kind of Mizzenhead and the Beara Peninsula. You're wondering where I'm going with this, aren't you?
I'm very much wondering.
Okay, well, you know the way, like, people say, like, the southwest county in Ireland is most definitely Kerry, which it is. But actually, underneath that, Cork continues, as you know, towards the Mizzenhead direction. And that's actually Cork. It's kind of propping up Kerry kind of thing. Well, it's the same with this, isn't it? Because I know that Norway, Sweden and Finland are the three across, but Norway actually goes above Sweden and Finland as well to reach Russia, isn't that it?
That is a fine point. Yes, it is. I have to say it is the most circuitous and enjoyable journey to Norway as a border with Russia. But you are correct. Yeah. Yes, it does. Yeah. Like Cork propping up Kerry,
it does
circumnavigate Sweden
and
Finland.
Okay, can I just ask a question here? What if you have a building in the most kind of northeasterly town of Norway and it's quite, you know, it's on the border or near the border, and if the toilet in your house happens to be facing towards Russia, should you reconstruct the house to make it face back towards Norway, and therefore if you do have a pee, it won't be facing it towards Russia?
My understanding is it's not like Mecca. I don't think God is aware that you are peeing towards Russia. I think this relates only to visible outdoor urination towards
outdoor.
Russia.
Well, yes. If you have an outdoor toilet where the back wall is broke, I mean, seriously, like, it has to be.
Well, that'll be a problem. If you have a glass wall in the back of your outhouse and your outhouse adjoins Russia in a manner akin to Cork propping up Kerry, well then, yes, you would fall foul of it.
That's
because
a problem.
A man who was reporting on this in Norway explained, and I quote, "Urinating in nature is not necessarily offensive, but it depends on the point of view. Here it falls under the law prohibiting offensive behaviour at the border." So I suspect even if you were behind a tree facing east, it would be all right as long as the diameter of the tree was such that it blocked all arc of view.
So wait a minute.
Of your urination.
If you're caught or if somebody sees you, can you be fined? Can you make a citizen's arrest?
I don't know if you can make a citizen's arrest, but if somebody in officialdom arrests you, yes, you can be fined up to nearly €300. Then the Norwegians do not take any stuff like this lightly.
Right. Okay.
What Norwegian would? Hey. Where was I? We return to China for actually, I know you're going to hate this, so I'll do it as quickly as possible, but I think it's actually fascinating. the big news of this week, the momentous news of this week,
has been
Grimace has been identified.
Grimace. As in now, to grimace, as in
no,
to...
No. Cast your mind back, Dave, to miserable afternoons you will have spent sitting on small plastic chairs in a McDonald's because there had to be a kid's party and everybody wanted a Happy Meal. You will remember in that experience that McDonald's has a set of characters. There is the Hamburglar, who is dressed a bit like Normandy onion seller.
Oh, yeah.
There's Ronald McDonald.
There's Plexi. Up in the multiplex in Stillorgan, the big guy goes around Plexi. My son did that outside a supermarket for a few days. And after about, like, you know, 5 hours of kids coming up saying, "Well, my mom, I'm going to get my photograph taken," and so on, so he realised he didn't have to smile. It never occurred to him. But he's putting his arm around the kid. Anyway, go on.
No, that is the Daniel Day-Lewis way to be Plexi, even though they can't see the smile. The method emotes into every other aspect of the character. So,
did you ever see Succession, the greatest program on TV of the last 10 years?
When have whatever station it's on.
Well, when he had to go to the theme park, and he was really very nasty to some of the people. Anyway, go on, Roman.
Seen the Mattress Men documentary about Mattress Mick?
Mattress Mick? No, I haven't. No. That's really weird. On the way into work today, there was a van in front of me at the traffic lights. It was the Mattress Mick van.
If you watch the documentary, they have a man dressed as a mattress and he spends his day dancing on the Malahide Road.
Fantastic.
While telling himself, personally reinforcing slogans like cat calendars, he is the most inspiring person I've ever seen. But anyway, we return to the characters in McDonald's. There is the Hamburglar, there is Ronald McDonald, there is Mayor Cheese, who is a cheeseburger and apparently has a position in officialdom, and there is Grimace.
Okay.
Grimace is a big, giant purple teardrop with a face.
Okay.
Do you know what he is?
He's a big, giant purple teardrop with a face.
That's what he looks like. That's not what he is,
sorry.
Dave. Do you know what he is?
Grimace. I don't know.
A taste bud.
Oh, is he? A taste bud. All right.
Do you not think that's the weirdest thing, to make a giant character for kids that's a part of the human anatomy? It's an animated taste bud.
Okay, I'll say yes.
I told you you wouldn't like it, so I did it fast. A nightclub in energy is going to be harnessing a nightclub. I'll do that again using the words in the right order. A nightclub in Glasgow will harness energy from dancers, which makes much more sense than a nightclub in energy harnessing Glasgow from dancers, which would be almost impossible.
I don't understand. I mean, this is all to do with things that I don't understand, like physics and stuff, etc., or whatever. It's to do with, I don't know, whatever. What are you talking about?
Heat pumps.
Heat pumps.
Heat pumps. A heat pump is a very efficient way to either heat or cool a building. So your fridge is a heat pump. The air conditioner in your car is a heat pump. The air conditioner in your building is a heat pump. And what it does effectively is, if there's too much hot inside, it moves it outside and gives it up to the cold. If there's too much cold inside, it moves the hot inside. Essentially.
Shoring up some
physics. So because the COP26 climate conference, which is a thing that people seem to get very activated about and I didn't know was happening, it's taking place on October 31st in Glasgow this year. So a nightclub is going to take all of the sweaty energy, the febrile pulsating lust and hepping and a hopping that goes on in nightclubs, and they are going to store it in tubes underground.
Well, that's a thing. I mean, that's a doable thing, is it?
As to how efficient it is and all the rest of it, and whether or not it's a bit of a publicity stunt, I wouldn't go too far down that road, but it is technically feasible. If they have a heat pump, they're going to effectively extract heat from the environment and air condition it, and then that has to be leached off somewhere, so you might as well leach it into a tube under the ground, and theoretically you can reconvert it back into energy.
And it's all from humans in the nightclub.
Oh yeah, you know what nightclubs are like, Dave.
Wow.
Remember, you know,
it's all the
sweaty.
Body
Look
heat.
At Michael Gove.
Actually, Body
you
Heat. Have you ever seen
small
the movie?
Town off.
Have you ever seen the movie? Yeah, I saw Michael Gove dancing the other day. Have you ever seen the movie Body Heat?
Was Body Heat the follow-up to Basic Instinct?
No, Body Heat was.
That was Sliver.
Yeah, but Body Heat was 40 years after Double Indemnity, which is the same kind of movie. We need another movie like that now because it's about 40 years ago. It's Mickey Rourke's first movie, maybe. He's fantastic and he's only in it for about 5 minutes. He's a bomb maker, really good. And it's, what do you call your man? Oh, God almighty. William Hurt plays this guy. Ned Racine, I remember his name. He was a real idiot. And anyway, it's a very good movie.
There should be a, maybe there is. Is there a good biography of Mickey Rourke? Because he's an interesting chap.
There's actually, oh no, wait, maybe there isn't. Sorry, I'm thinking of something else. I was going to say, there's actually a documentary out at the moment, but actually it's about Val Kilmer, which I haven't seen. It's actually called Val. Have you seen the Moby documentary? Do you know what it's called? Seriously, it's out at the moment. It's called Moby Doc. Seriously. Anyway, that's out at the moment too, which I haven't seen either. But no,
Moby was on, Moby did the single, do you remember MTV Cribs?
I do.
Moby said the single most Moby sentence in the history of mankind on an episode of MTV Cribs.
When he takes the cameras into his house, yeah.
Correct. He's taking the cameras around his house, which is a small loft, I think, in Brooklyn.
Yeah, when, he's right beside 9/11. He was looking at the whole thing.
Is that it? Yeah. Right. And he comes out onto his little tiny loft and says the sentence, "This is where I keep my harmonium." It's like, yes, of course it is, Moby. In other news,
yes, go on.
I know one of the things that you have dreamed of, and I'm just overjoyed to be able to tell you that it can now come to fruition.
Yes.
And I may actually put my hand in my pocket and make this happen. Rudy Giuliani will sell you a personalized video message on Cameo.
As in, like, you know, you pay money, I presume, when he says happy birthday, Johnny, or whatever your name is, yeah?
He will say, "Hi, Dave, this is Rudy Giuliani. I wish I had met you down with Plexi in the Stillorgan Bowl back in the day."
Wow. You haven't seen, there's an article about him, in lots of places in the current edition of Vanity Fair, where it goes on from 9/11's kind of, you know, major mayor and all the rest to 2021's haunted ghoul. That's the way they put it.
He's the most fascinating man, isn't he?
The most downhill trajectory I've ever seen. And it keeps going. Have you seen the latest one where he's shaven in JFK in the airport?
No.
Oh yeah, he's in the canteen, or he's in the kind of eating place or whatever, and somebody takes a picture of him shaving with his electric razor and then eating all the food, and as everybody knows, electric razors, little hairs go all over the place. It's just each week, well, obviously the biggest one of all was the Four Seasons total landscaping right beside the sex shop and the crematorium. It was fantastic. You got the wrong Four Seasons.
But you see, I think people, because he's now such a laughing stock, it is easy to forget.
Weird.
How significant he was, because even before the America's Mayor thing, he was the one who was the big...
He cleaned up New York, supposedly.
Exactly.
Well, whatever.
Took on the mob. Yeah. Well, that was his legacy, was that he was seen to have taken on the mob, cleaned up New York, and then was a huge figure in 9/11, and was then a putative presidential candidate, and now is a Muppet whose head is dissolving on TV beside a porn shop.
Yeah, exactly. And the stuff is running down his face, and he's shaving in the wrong places, and he's in Borat's kind of crosshairs. And also, what do you call it, his stuff to get rid of the election and all the rest of it. He's been suspended now from practicing law as well. And also,
he has his law license gone, and he's facing $1.3 billion
from
defamation
Dominion.
Suit from Dominion.
That's right,
which is why, Dave, we should take some pity on the man and pay him $199 to say something nice to us.
Is that how much it costs?
And like, $199.
And how long does it go on? Like, could I ask him to read a Charles Dickens novel or anything, no?
I don't think so, but I know a judge who could make him, he said, in what has to be one of the great segues of all time.
Sorry? Go on, yes. Who could make, yeah, what?
I know a judge who could make him read Charles Dickens.
Really?
Specifically, Judge Timothy Spencer, QC, who has this week sentenced somebody to reading William Shakespeare, Thomas Hardy and Charles Dickens.
Really? And sentence, who's the somebody and why?
The sentencee is a man called Ben John. Who, that's, you know, your parents get lazy, two first names you'd be grand. So he's 21, and he was told that he could stay out of prison if he stays away from white supremacy literature and if he reads Jane Austen, William Shakespeare, Thomas Hardy and Charles Dickens. And he's going to have to show up in court to explain or to answer questions on what he has read to prove that he's actually doing his reading.
Well, hold on a second now. Did he just look that sort of thing up on Google, or might he have been seen to be somebody who might act on it?
The sense I get is that he's a wally, because the judge said that he concluded his crime was an act of teenage folly. He said that he was highly susceptible. He said, "I'm not of the view that harm was likely to have been caused." And he said he strikes him as a man who has no friends. You know, so in judge terms, that's you're a dork, son. So his way of curing him of all of this is subjecting the poor her to Charles Dickens.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. All right. No question.
Charles Dickens, Dave.
Yeah. What about
paid by the word. Like, if ever anybody was paid by the word,
hold on,
it's
Dickens. A second. I'm a bit of a Charles Dickens fan, I can tell you.
Oh no.
Do you know I can learn. I'm sorry, I can quote a full Charles Dickens paragraph from, I think it's Hard Times, from when I was studying it in college. Do you want to hear it?
Sure, yeah. Consider me a little vessel ready to be filled with
Okay,
facts.
Well, the point about it is that there was this guy, one character, who didn't know how to get to somebody's house. And he said, God, I don't know, can I go to your house in London? And the other guy jumps in and says, look, I'll come and collect you. And he says, judging that your peregrinations in this metropolis have not as yet been extensive and that your knowledge in the arcana of the modern Babylon that is London has not reached full maturity, I would be glad to call this evening and install you in the knowledge of the nearest way.
Dave!
Now, why did I learn that off? I have no idea. There was no reason.
That is absolutely brilliant. It's like I that thing of unimportant paragraphs. I think you're onto something here because I have a similar thing with Shakespeare. I know none of the important bits, but I have several lines and paragraphs that bear no relation
to
the
Dickens plot. Will start off with a quote of like four words, and then there's like literally four pages just describing all this. Like, get on with
Paid
it. I get your point.
By the word, Dave. Yeah. He then has to wade through Thomas Hardy, which, let's be clear, like, oh my God.
Hardy, what?
Hard
Thomas Hardy, the Wessex novels. You must be joking. Did you ever read The Mayor of Casterbridge?
I did, and Tessa D'Urbervilles.
Yeah, and Michael Henchard. Oh, God, it's terrible, sad. The poor guy gets drunk and he sells his wife and his daughter and then he gets really famous and then afterwards they come back to haunt him. It's brilliant. What are you on about?
No, I like your version because it took about 3 seconds and got to all the pithy bits. But Shakespeare, of course, is nice. Anyway, Dr. Barbie.
Dr. Barbie. There's a guy. Oh, Dr. Is this something to do with the SS and the Second World War or anything? No.
Whoa, as in Klaus? No, this is as in doll.
Oh, the doll, right, okay.
Yes. I'll try to find a Klaus Barbie story for next week, but I don't think he's up to anything
Barbie,
recently.
Wait a minute. So Barbie, the doll, that's still a thing, is it?
Apparently, yeah. I think they're trying to get out of the whole Barbie looking a bit like she's a cocktail waitress in Vegas and try to make her a bit more just
wait
a standard,
minute. Do I remember
person.
Something about LGBTQ plus and all the rest that Barbie is part of all that? That Barbie actually broke up with, was Ken her brother or her boyfriend?
Her boyfriend,
yeah. That broke up with Ken and something, I don't know what else, about
Did
something
he?
Like that, yeah.
Did he get to keep the dream house?
Was there a dream house, is there?
Oh, yeah, there was the dream house, the Malibu dream house and the pink Corvette.
Oh, right, okay.
Like, let's be clear, like, in that relationship, do you know what I mean? Ken is the Larry Fortensky of the piece.
Oh, God, didn't he marry Elizabeth Taylor?
He did. He was a caterpillar digger driver.
Number 7 or number 8, whatever.
Correct.
It was.
Well, I think both technically, because didn't she do one twice before?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Richard Burton, she married twice. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So where are you with this now, Ken? Yeah.
Professor Dame Sarah Gilbert, who is the researcher behind the Oxford COVID-19 vaccine, which I think then was produced by AstraZeneca, she has been honoured as a Barbie role model, and they are making a version of Barbie Professor Sarah Gilbert doll in the hope that it will inspire girls into STEM careers.
Science, technology, engineering and maths. Really? Yes. That's fascinating.
And weirdly, because you would have thought that if you were a professor in Oxford...
Yeah, that the ultimate accolade is to be a Barbie role model.
Exactly. I love it. You can stick your Nobel Prize. Yeah, I'll tell you what I want. But it turns out she was pretty pleased with it. She said, I am passionate about inspiring the next generation of girls into STEM careers. Science, technology, engineering and maths. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. And hope that children who see my Barbie will realise how vital careers in science are to help the world around us. My wish is that my doll will show children careers they may not be aware of, like a vaccinologist.
Well, wow, that's fantastic. Yeah, that's interesting. I never thought of that myself. But there you go. That's very good.
That's it, Jeff.
Oh, fantastic. Okay.
Keep them, Barbie.
So, yeah, we can talk more about The Secret Life of what? Clams.
Lobsters.
Lobsters.
Do you like clams, Dave?
On that note, Anton, good man yourself. Thank you so much indeed for your contribution to the programme today, as usual.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.